trying to get an opportunity to get out, talk to everybody about what's going on. Obviously, in the news a lot of unrest, uneasiness, mostly because people don't get the whole story, what's going on, and the reason for it. So, I want to start by saying that I want to separate what I'm doing and my position in the news with the budget, with the governor's budget issue. They're really two separate issues. What I have done is nothing to do with the governor's agenda or his budget at this point, and I want to make that very clear. So I'm going to kind of rewind back to Election Day briefly and kind of run you through a nutshell of what drove me to this decision to leave my caucus and try to form a coalition. And it was simply for the goal of trying to get a House that will function. The House needs to function. We had no chance of functioning or succeeding at the way our makeup was. And so to reiterate quickly, the House currently consists of 8 freshmen, 5 sophomores, some juniors, and some seniors. So in a 21-member-led coalition, you got virtually no experience, and even some of them juniors and seniors have only been there more, you know, going under the third term. Not a lot of experience in that. And so on organization day after the election, when you're in the meeting room and you're listening to everybody have the conversations, and the freshmen.
Sorry to interrupt. A couple of people in the back said they can't hear. We're going to move this.
Okay.
In maybe right
about there. Does it come up any higher?
Maybe.
Let's try that. All right, I'll try to. Hate to sit there and stare at the mic and not look at you as I'm talking, but I'll see what I can do. So when you get in the organizational meetings and you start having the discussion on policies, the things that are coming in front of us, PFD, payments, repayments, constitutional amendments, and the organization, and you listen to some of the freshmen saying, we want no Democrats in our caucus, and we won't have a binding caucus. And in the binding caucus rule is simply two rules. It's typically when the speaker makes a ruling, you support the speaker's position if you're sitting in the majority with him. And the only other rule you have is when it gets down to a budget vote, you have to vote to support the budget. And the reason that is because it's the only constitutional mandate that we have. You have to pass that budget out in a predetermined time frame. It has to be done. And I can tell you that nobody votes for a budget they like. It's never been done. It will never be done. It's never perfect. But it's a series of compromises, and you finally get there and you pass the budget you have in front of you. Having said that, every single legislator has an opportunity to affect that budget through all the finance committees, subcommittees, your buddies in the Senate on the finance committees, even floor amendments, you know. So everybody gets a shot at it. But at the end of the day, when you got to make the budget vote, you got to pass that budget. So that's the two caucus rules. Some of the new freshmen had issues with that. The organization in itself, 21 members, the sheer numbers don't allow you to succeed. You cannot walk in lockstep on every single issue. And therefore, it's a need to build your numbers. And that means working across the aisle, which is not a new concept. We work across the aisle every single day, every legislative session with these guys. You look at any history on legislation, and it's always passed by bipartisan support. The issue was this year was who was going to be in control. A couple things have changed. Republicans demanded to be in control because we won majority in the votes. The problem is that the current House coalition knew we could not succeed. We had nothing to offer them. There was no capital money, no positions of power. We give all them away during our organizational day. So there was no reason for them to come, plus the fact they knew that we could not succeed. And so they held out. They held strong. They held firm. So the idea when I left the caucus was to get these two sides to start acknowledging we don't have the numbers, and in fact we've got to start talking about building this coalition. And what the current coalition members were interested in was just a level playing field. They just wanted to have in leadership roles 3 of them and 3 Republicans, you know, and then build the organization from there. That's kind of what stalled us. It wasn't so much about the issues, but that's kind of where this has been. So I did what I did, I think, on the 8th of December. With the purpose of getting these talks started so we could get organized before we got to Juneau. People chose to wait until we got to Juneau to even engage in these talks, and now we're a month into session, and as of yesterday, it's finally starting to come together. They elected a speaker, they're building the coalition right now, and it looks like we're moving forward in a progressive manner, finally. And coalition's still being built today, so I can't really tell you who's holding what positions. Right now, they're slowly developing the committees and the leadership roles as well. So that's kind of where we are today on that concept. So I kind of want to roll into the budget items right now, and I want to talk a little bit because it's just rolled out. So there's going to be a lot of people in this room who'll be more experts on this budget than what I will be, because I take a broad look at everything or certain items in the budget. Peggy Erkanoff with the school district, she'll be your source. You really want to know the impacts to education in the borough, she will be your source for education. Lisa Parker, post-secondary education, university system, I saw her here. She will be your source to go to for the specific impacts to the university system. Borough Mayor's office will be your source on the impacts on the 4356 properties, the repeal of that taxation. Brenda Ahlberg she'll have her thumb on top of the impacts. But I want to highlight just a few of them things that has the potential to affect the borough, the state overall, kind of a nutshell. I'm not sure how much you guys have heard. The budget will be a couple weeks where we really dive into the details and everybody knows specifically, but many of these changes proposed come with legislative changes. They have to have a statutory change in order for the governor to enact them. So I believe there'll be somewhere around 15 bills in front of us that the legislature will have to consider. Some of these proposals as we mentioned, the 4356 properties, SB 57, it takes away the borough's ability to tax our oil and gas properties. The state has always done that for us and reimbursed us our mill rates. That impact to the borough is about $15 million. Education funding across the board is cut about $300 million, roughly 25% in round numbers. The impact to the borough on that is right at $20 million, best estimates today. And so if you want to make a comparison, you know, about every $1 million to the education system, to the borough in education funding, equates to about 10 teaching positions. So if you lose $10 million, $20 million, you can do the math times 10 and see the impacts to employment, pretty substantial. And the fact of the matter is, it would just result in consolidation and closing schools and some pretty drastic changes. Department of Transportation, public facilities took a 33% hit. Statewide aviation, that took about 62% of that. So state-owned airports, I think the closest one we have is probably Kisilov Airport. Rural Alaska will take a big brunt of that. Not sure if they will close them airports or they'll just turn them over to local governments or what they will do with them. Construction capital improvement projects are taking a 2% to 5% reduction, depending on the area of the state. The Alaska Marine Highway System ferries, $96 million in reduction. It's about 65% cut, and services would remain through October of this year. And after that, they're bringing a consultant, maybe looking at privatizing the whole entire ferry system. Southeast will be devastated by the Alaska Marine Highway System. For us in South Central, Prince William Sound, Valdez, Cordovia, Whittier, people who've taken the ferries across, Homer to Kodiak routes, Seldovia routes. So it will impact us on the peninsula overall in that marine highway system. Department of Natural Resources, 14.4%. Land division will be consolidated into mining, land, and water. Pipeline coordination section will be consolidated with oil and gas. So some consolidations there. Some of this stuff probably workable for sure. Corrections is one. Concerns me a little bit locally. It's about a 10.5% reduction or $32 million. So for us, Wildwood has proposed to close one wing. It results in 46 people losing their jobs, 46 PCN numbers, personnel control numbers at the state level. So that's also millions of dollars in payroll. But 46 families who ultimately will move or be without a work, which trickles down to impacting schools and everything else that we do. So, public broadcasting, Alaska Public Radio Network, public broadcasting is completely zeroed out. Power cost equalization. Power cost equalization. Well, those of us down here, I mean, we, some of us like public radio, you know, in the urban areas. Some people enjoy it, not so much. In other parts of the state, it seems to be all they have. So it'll be, it's, I think it's $8 million total. So not a seriously big number. Power cost equalization, I think they moved $1 billion of that, wiped it out, over, put it in Commerce, Community, Economic Development. There'll be some changes there. The senior benefit program that our seniors enjoyed, many of you remember it as the old longevity bonus program way back in early 70s was started. So in the senior benefit program, there's about 11,000 seniors across the state that enjoy them benefits. They range from $76 a month to some seniors up to a high of $250 a month. And on the peninsula here, we have 1,171 seniors who receive that benefit. Mostly low-income seniors that enjoy that. So that would go away for them. Put these glasses back on. So as I mentioned, education funding, about $20 million. Oil and gas properties, loss of that, $15 million to the borough, roughly. The 46 positions at Wildwood, I mentioned. And just in the numbers alone, it's just millions in lost wages there. The state recorder's office will be closing. The university system is a major concern for me. Almost a 50% reduction in post-secondary education. And that means Southeast University would end up being a hub for community colleges. More likely, the Kenai campus would be closed. At best, it'll be reverted back to a community college type of deal, back to the community. And it may be beneficial or not be a discussion for the community to have and the borough to have, but more than likely, that would be one question for Lisa Parker. She does sit on the Board of Regents, so she will have a better handle on what they decide to do with the university system if these cuts are maintained. And then the senior benefit program I talked about. For all practical purposes at this time, you know, I've been really optimistic on our gas project. I wanted to see it go through at least to the permitting stage and have them guys looking for markets for that gas. I've said all along that the gas project is one that probably a handful of people in the state would know how to put together the magnitude of that project. So for all practical purposes, it seems to be dead at this point. We hope to see it through to the final permitting stage, EIS. They did take another $5 million from AGDC. I believe the governor's intent would be to rather engage industry back into that project, and I'm not sure they're there yet as far as their rates of return. So I'm not as optimistic as I once was on that. Statewide, it looks like there's probably in the 700 plus jobs to be lost at state level around the state, reduction in PCNs. And in the university system, last projection I saw was about 1,300 jobs. If they lose the funding that's proposed, would be about 1,300 jobs. These are direct jobs, and then, you know, there's estimates of the trickle-down effect, anywhere from 14,000 up to 20,000 indirect impacts. So, and then what's the last one I got written down here? The other big thing is, that we'll have to watch is around the state, there's a big move to privatize everything. So, you know, you can all remember back when we used to send inmates out of the state, and then we brought them back, and now it's looking like they're wanting to go the other way again, privatize corrections, and to in fact ship inmates back out of state again. So be conversations to be had in that regard. So now, having said that, they're just to highlighting some of the impacts, some of the changes that we're likely to see in one form or another. You know, the governor is correct in one thing, is that you can't keep deficit spending. At some point in time, whether you're an individual or a government or a corporation, you can't sustain that. You have to fix it. Where I differ with the governor is in the approach to doing this. He wants to wield the big axe and do it all in one failed swoop, you know, and I think it takes a more analytical, methodical approach to right-sizing government and minimize these impacts, you know, and have the conversations about what do we want our communities to look like. That's where I will differ with the governor, acknowledging that he is correct in the fact we have to get the budget balanced one way or another. I'm just not sure it has to all happen this year. So with that, I'll leave it, take some questions, anything I can answer.
Thank you. I know there's a lot of passion and a lot of opinions in this room, so we are going to give as many people as a chance as possible to speak. I want to go over a few rules. Number one, please be respectful. We need to keep this orderly and respectful. We're going to have some roving microphones. We have two or three?
One.
Okay. I guess we have one. And so we're going to kind of rotate right, left, middle, as far as questions to get as many people. You'll have 60 seconds for a comment or a question. John is going to be up front with a card. So when you're asked to stop, please hand the microphone back to who you got it from. And then Gary will be able to speak. And after that, we'll move on to the next question. If you want to continue that conversation, you can do so afterwards or arrange a time with Gary. So with that, again, please be respectful. We don't have a lot of time, but we are going to have 20 minutes for questions or, 20 minutes. Okay. And so watch the card up front and put your hand up if you have a question. I know we have one over here first. Somebody already has the mic. So next question will come from this side of the room, and then we'll move to the middle and back over. So thank you.
Yeah, Gary, just a quick question. In the budget over here, in the budget, Jim Condetti here at the
table. Hi, Jim. You might rise so I could just pick you out.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. I can even see you now, Jim.
Checker. In the governor's budget, did you see any impacts to public safety? Funds flowing through to municipalities or involving state troopers, et cetera?
You know, it's the public safety aspect's a little fuzzy to me yet. You kept saying we were increasing. The first spreadsheet I saw, Jim, actually showed a reduction in public safety with an increase in judicial line item. But overall, I didn't see it, but I'm hearing different reports, different aspects. I may know there was a reduction in the VPSO program. So it's an area I have to dive in two more. I'm not sure at the end of the day where we're at, which one gets increased, which one gets decreased in public safety. It didn't increase to the magnitude I was expecting from what I was hearing, and so I'll leave it at that. And I want to, before we go on, I want to say that I have a Shea Sigert here in front and Jamie Jones at the back of this table, so any questions I don't get answered and you want to follow up on or don't get to ask, get with one of these two and they will write them down and we'll be sure and get back with you on them. So. You can yell, Gary.
Okay, thank you. Gary, you didn't mention the state reimbursing bonds that have already been passed. I think that it was mentioned in the budget that they're rolling back the 70% they're supposed to pay on the bonds that have been passed here.
That's very true. That's being proposed as well. It'll be another conversation, and this is where the school debt reimbursement bonds and others, so there will be, I think the borough at one time had some bonds issued for school re-roofs and things, so. It's a topic that, as I mentioned, Peggy Irkinoff will know a lot more about it. So I can definitely follow up on the whole process with you, and I see him taking notes. I'm sure we'll do that, Karen. But Peggy's a great resource. That'd be the biggest impact. So.
Hi, Gary. Good morning. Thanks for being here. John McCombs, President of Cook Inlet Fishermen's Fund and board member, you see that, and I'm curious, you didn't mention any cuts to the fish and game budget. They already cut out the smolts in the Kenai River, and they have no idea what comes out of there every spring, and it's a important management tool, and I wondered if you could comment on the made possible cuts or additions to the fish and game budget. Thank you.
You know, it's another budget. Like I say, we're just slowly diving into them. I was trying to focus on what will impact the Kenai a lot is what I was looking for when I come down to talk to you folks. You're right. I didn't see an increase. I saw some reductions, not drastic reductions. And of course, there's a lot of shifting going on, John. I don't really know the answer to that yet. We'll follow it. I have concerns about Fish and Cook Inlet this year. I had the commissioner designee in the office, Doug Vincent Lang, and he's a sport fish guy. He's a retired biologist, 25 plus years, great guy, and very experienced. But and I asked him point blank. I said, look, I'm a little concerned with your background and fisheries being with, you know, how important they are to Cook Inlet and the pressure for the Mat-Su and the sport fish industry. I said, what's your intent? I said, you gonna be political or you gonna listen to the science? And he said, and he pretty bluntly said, I'm already getting pressure to do something in Cook Inlet, but he said, I'm gonna listen to the science. And so I was encouraged by that. But I did see some reductions in the fish and game budget, John, and we're gonna watch that and see. There's a lot of support for the research in that, so.
Paul had his hand up first. We're right behind you.
Right behind you.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Paul.
I know I wanted to come to this meeting to talk briefly about your efforts to organize the House. I imagine many other people are here for the same reason, to hear a little more about it, or perhaps just a comment, which is what I wish to do. And that would be to say that I have supported your efforts, that I'm sure came at no small personal cost to you over this last month. I think the Kenai Peninsula has a long-standing tradition of sending some of the most effective legislators to Juneau from this particular region of Alaska. And what makes them special is not just an intelligence, it's a commitment to the spirit of the best legislators and legislating that can be done. I thank you. I'm proud of you.
Thank you, Paul. Great to hear. And thank you. So, you know, when I went to Juneau this year, Paul, I have to say, when I saw the makeup and the issues, what I didn't get to say, folks, in the organizational day is that when I started having discussions with different factions of our Republican caucus, so like the Fairbanks, the Anchorage, the Mat-Su, the Freshmans, I could see the divide, the opinions, and I could see the campaign promises. And I could see that big divide on the policy issues that we hadn't begun to broach, haven't had a discussion. And I knew that when we got to Juneau, without fixing them or resolving them or talking about them then, how divided we were. My fear is that we got to Juneau, organized as 21, and when we got to them policy decisions with constitutional amendments, PFD payments, repayment, I said, we're gonna get, our divide will be so great, we will never fix it. It's better to deal with this right now and figure it out than it is to get 2 months or 3 months into session and completely implode. And that's what we were on track to do. We simply were on track to do that. There was no chance of success when the policy issues come up. And so another driving factor into what I did, you know, my focus was simply on the success of the House. The House has rolled over 50% in the last couple of years. We got all new members. Next year, there'll be another large group of freshmen again. I want to say that our state is changing, you know. I mean, prior legislators have had the luxury of enticing some of the real Bush Democrats with some capital money. Some of the discussions have revolved about how to spend all the money we had. And, you know, the legislator gets beat up on a lot for spending $15 billion in saving. I'm thankful that prior legislators had the fortitude to save some of that for just this day. We all knew this day was going to come, you know, and we're here now. And so everything in our state government, these are unprecedented times. It is changing. It's not like the state we grew up in 20 years ago. So kind of driving the need for this change and this discussion today.
Gary, Lisa Parker. One of the areas I wanted to point out that hasn't come to attention with respect to education changes is with the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And potentially that being eliminated, as well as changes to the Alaska Performance Scholarships, that if you've got students within the high school system here, may be eligible for those performance scholarships to attend the University of Alaska. And there is, for this next fiscal year, potential changes to that program, which could have, again, another adverse impact on our education system.
And you're correct. I think all them grants and scholarships are in jeopardy. I truly do. We didn't talk about, I didn't talk a lot about detail in education cuts, but the primary hit in education funding, so is the Head Start programs completely get eliminated. The most of the target is in the pre-K through 12th grade. Peggy can elaborate on that more, and I'm sure she will, but that's where the focus is on the education cuts. And yeah.
Yep. Gary, Ed Overs. My frustration is you ran as a Republican and you refused to organize with the Republicans. You wasted a month in Juneau. It's becoming clear, I believe you have a strong Democratic viewpoints. So I'd respect you a lot more if you change your registration today to being a Democrat.
Is there a question in there, Ed? Or, I mean,
yeah, are you a Democrat?
Well, I'm not registered as a Democrat. I've never subscribed to the Democratic philosophy, and so I would say no.
Why didn't you organize with the Republicans? You know, publicly, it really frustrated me when we heard you had committed to voting with the Republicans and basically pulled an untruth and went the different direction and voted for yourself.
So what Ed is referring to is a what that's referring to is we had negotiations here about a week ago, a completely gridlock, going nowhere, and nothing was going either side of the aisle. And we've been a month into session now. It was time to move the needle. And so I believe, I'm trying to get my time frame right here. So I believe on Friday night, I had decided that I would approach the Republicans on Monday and tell them I would be their 21st vote. I would be their 21st vote to create the majority so they could organize, because the staff and legislators at this point need to get organized. And it was just that point, talks weren't moving. So it was a way of moving the needle. So I mentioned that to Representative Stutes, maybe Friday night, Saturday morning, to let her know what my intent was, so that the talks were over as far as I was concerned. So late Saturday night, she got with me and said, and it wasn't that her concern was them being a minority. She recognized the need to get organized, too. When she approached me, she said, my concern is the same as yours. What happens when the house falls apart in 30 or 60 days, which it was destined to do? It was gonna fall apart. And I said, we're not moving forward now. I don't know another way to move the needle. You guys can't seem to work a deal. And she said, well, let me. Can I move your name? Let me put you up there as speaker. She said, let me nominate you. She said, I'm sure my coalition will support you. And if only one mayor member supports you, then at least we can have a speaker and get the coalition concept organized. That was how this come about, like on Saturday night. And I said, well, you better have that conversation and see if that's what you want to do. So I believe early Monday morning, I met with her and Bryce Edgman. And she ran it by Bryce, and Bryce liked the idea. They were going to a caucus meeting at 9 o'clock, I'm gonna say, and run it by their caucus. And I said, let me know, whatever you wanna do, you know. And that was the last I had any conversation with them. I had no idea what their caucus said, what they were going to do. So floor got delayed on that day. And about 10 minutes to two, I was in the parking lot soaking up some sun, and Lance Pruitt come out. And he said, there's a proposed coalition concept out there, and we just run it by our caucus. And I said, well, what is it? And so he rattled off who would be where and the organization, you know. And it seemed like a way forward. It was down the lines of what I wanted to see as far as a coalition. But he said their Republican caucus was meeting. He said they'd like you to come up and talk to them. And so I did. And I told them then at that time, I said, I will come back and give you guys your 21st vote to organize. But I said, let me tell you, I'm setting you up to fail. I said, I don't want to do this. I said, but we got to get the organization moving. I said, I'm just coming back to give you 21st vote to organize. I actually tried to discourage him from inviting me back. I said, the question you want to ask yourself is, do we want him back? I said, you got another option in front of you that leads you to a path to success. I said, you guys need to have that conversation, decide how you want to go. And so that's how all that went around. And so I left the room. They continued to have the conversation. Do we coalesce as Republican-led? Knowing we can't succeed. Or do we move forward with this coalition concept that was well underway? And sure enough, they decided that they wanted to go forward. You know, well, I need to backtrack a little bit because there was four members who had agreed to that coalition concept. And so they immediately went back and told Bryce that they were backing out of their prearranged deal. They were no longer coming. They chose to coalesce as Republicans, you know. That is when Louise Stutes come to me and asked me to put my name forward, keep these talks open. She said, if even one support you, you still got a Republican speaker, we can build a coalition around this. They were more interested in the coalition concept. And I said, well, I said that I was going to support a Republican nominee. She said, did you name a specific candidate? I said, no, I was very specific. I didn't know who they were going to nominate because at that time, Lance Pruitt was in the running, Steve Thompson was in the running, Dave Tallarico was in the running. They didn't know who they were going to put forward, even up to the day that it did, that they did it. So in a nutshell, I'll wrap this up, but that's kind of how that come around. So they were very concerned, and so we thought, well, we took a shot. So we put my name forward. I voted for myself. If one of them would have supported me, we would have had a Republican speaker, and we could have coalesced around that concept. That didn't happen. And since then, now, as of yesterday, the coalition concept is back on. They've elected a speaker. They're moving forward with building the team. So we're getting there. We got the coalition being formed. Committees are being created now, and we're moving ahead. So.
Hi, Gary. My name's Christine. I have respected you as what I thought was Republican values for a long time, starting with your votes against the unanimous stream property grab. However, I'm confused at this point, and I believe your waffling back and forth, indecision, has left you with a lack of credibility. Now, I would prefer to see you as undeclared. I know it's possible, we've already seen it done, and that restores the integrity of the R behind your name for all of us. It's been, for me personally, this just is not actually a sucker punch as far as I'm concerned. I believe, and I can't count on you to vote Republican with the Republicans or with the philosophies going forward. Now, as far as his budget is concerned, is it easier to cut your finger off a little bit at a time? Or to whack it off all at once and be done with it. Now, I personally am for whacking it all off one time. Then we don't have to suffer forever. So I would prefer to see you support Dunleavy and change your identification to a U.
Well, thanks for that. I'm sure there's a lot of people would like that, but it's simply not going to happen. I mean, you can't define Republican. I've never voted down party lines. I've always been an issue-by-issue candidate. I'll remain that way. You know, I think the Republican Party has done more to divide us as Republicans in the last couple of years than any time in our state history, you know. I think we're on a path to correction now. I can tell you that the new chair of the Republican Party is a uniter, not a divider. I've been with him a lot in the last couple of weeks, been a big supporter. He's more interested in success as well. I mean, he definitely wants to see Republican-led, but he's interested in the success of the House. So I'll remain Republican. I'll always vote the issues, not down the party. So anybody who ever thought that I was going to do that obviously didn't know me very well from day one. So, and I've been around local government long enough. Most of you know who I am, what I stood for. That's where we are there. Questions? Yes, Peggy.
Peggy Urkenef, representing the school district. I want to speak to education funding. I just spent several days in Juneau and met with many legislators, Democrats, Republicans, one who is now undeclared, and speaking specifically about education on the peninsula and statewide. We've looked as closely as we can into the budget that has been proposed by this governor, and there's was lacking detail. So some of the fuzziness is because the departments are just getting the deeper dive into what their budgets are. The budgets are changing to be centralized in our state, so that's why there is a little confusion even in education. You've heard that the BSA is being cut. It's actually an underfunding of the foundation formula, which is good for us in that if the BSA is cut or added to, it corresponds and triggers a response with what the borough can fund on a local level. When education to the funding formula is underfunded, it does not cut education funding on the state level, I mean on the local level, and I have to stop so I didn't get to finish saying. So I'll say that, I'll talk later.
Senior benefits, they're going to be taken away. If there was legislation to replace them, would you support that?
I'd have to see what it is. I don't know. There's nothing proposed. I don't know if I support it till I read it and see what it does. I'm not a big proponent of taking these away. They've been adjusted drastically. I know that people depend on, you know, the reality of it is seniors who are counting these are very, very low income. And whether you think you like social programs or not, I mean, you can remember back in the 70s when we started the longevity bonus program, it's because seniors were flocking this state just as fast as they were turning 55, and we were losing all that talent, all the retirees, and some of that was created back then to entice them to stay. Well, it's been downsized considerably, and now we're simply supporting those who really can't get by on their own. And so if any of you in my generation or younger, when you had aging parents and you seen them have to start spending more time at doctors and medicine being what it was, I can tell you personally, I used to give my mother a credit card when she was alive and I paid all of her expenses. And I'd get that bill in the month and I'd say, man, when you're on Social Security, how in the world do they afford these meds? You know, if I hadn't given her that credit card, there's no way. So the reality is, if you're giving a senior $250 a month to help with them expenses, that's the high end. The low end, $76 a month. I think that's it's a pretty responsible social thing to do for our seniors. And so at this point, I'm good with where it's at. So.
Time for three more questions.
Do you have any idea of when we might hear what committee assignments are going to be and whatnot? Is it within a week, or do you think it's just going to continue to be a tumultuous?
I think a couple of days. They're slowly being created. They're being negotiated. Who's going to come over for what committees? Some of them are in the works, partially formed now, not finalized. So, but I think in the next couple of days, you'll pretty much see all the committees together.
So. Hello, Representative Brian Tunseth from Kenai. Thanks morning, for being Brian. Here. Just a couple comments. First of all, I'd like to say I think that if what you did had worked and you were speaker, you'd be championed at this moment. So I won't sign this thing. I think it's a bit of sour grapes, personally. My question is, do you support getting rid of the Marijuana Control Board and the Alcohol Control Board? And if so, is what's good for the goose good for the sauce? And would you consider doing the same with Board of Fish?
No, I wouldn't support getting rid of any of them because the way we operate, we probably got 500 different boards and commissions out there, and they regulate their own industries from hair barbers to nail dressers to dentists to the medical board. I mean, that's how our government is operated. So Board of Fish is an advisory board. I do support keeping them as non-political as possible. We got great members from every walks of life on Board of Fish, and some, you know, whether it's sport, commercial, conservation, scientists. I mean, and that's how these boards are made up. And so if you take the Marijuana Control Board, Alcohol Control Board, you have to put the members on there that are moderate, middle of the road. You can't swing it left, can't swing it right. Then it gets political. And that's our job, is to keep that as unbiased as we can. But I think them people regulating their own industries is the way to go. So.
Hi, Gary. Thanks. Of course, let's talk about the Board of Fish, that elephant in the room. 20 years they haven't been down here, and they call themselves a public process. And I just want to thank you and the other political types that have tried to make an effort to get them to reverse their decision to not come down here. And I think it's crazy that they can continue to call themselves a
public process and they want to reach out and have people participate, but they've cut us off for 20 years and I hope you can do something. I know you think they should be political, but they're an extremely political body and that's why they have not been here for 20 years. Thank you.
Thanks, John. And you know, I didn't support their decision to move back to Anchorage because I guess I have no good reason for it. Like you said, it's been 20 plus years since they've been here. And you know, I don't know that the board itself is as political as they were subject to political influence. And that's what happened on that move and on that vote.
So Gary, it's Paul Shadura.
Hi, Paul.
So all I hear is the doom and gloom and the loss of the jobs. So what's the governor or the legislature going to do to fill that void? What are they going to do to build the state? I mean, that was what I thought the governor was part of his platform, was making things better for us. All I hear now is you lose your job, you leave. There's nothing to take its place. I see cuts in everything incrementally throughout the state that will not make us grow. So what's the solution for that for the legislature? What's your solution?
Well, you're right. It won't make us grow. I mean, Ms. Hutchinson used the analogy of slicing off your finger at a time or one big whack. Well, do one big whack and just bleed out, right? So, I mean, that's kind of...
Well, if you cut your head off, yeah.
Well, I mean, the point being, you know, there's a lot of administrators in this room and very smart professional people. I've never seen an administrator wield the big axe and take this approach to right-sizing government. You know, there's a methodical, analytical approach to doing what we do, and that's having the conversations. If you got to cut funding at the university, get with the chancellors and get with the regents and figure out a path forward. What are we doing we shouldn't be doing, you know? So that's the type of approach I would rather take.
Well, is it good government balance?
Well, it's balanced, but I mean, you have to right size it at some point. You gotta quit spending more than you're taking in. That's definitely not sustainable. So then what do? You either cut or you raise revenues. Have the discussion. What do you want to do? And how much do you want to cut? You know, what services? It's kind of interesting for some of us who are getting older. In 2008, when prices started rising to $100, $130 a barrel, and I think our UGF fund at that time, memory recalls, and it's not what it used to be, was about $3.2 billion in UGF funds in 2008. And in 2012, I ran for this seat and lost. And going back, when I ran in 16, I went back to the election pamphlet and reviewed the candidate little spiel we put in the election pamphlet. You know, and I talked about how unsustainable it was at that time in 2012 when we had $100, $130 barrel oil. I said, someday, this has got to be addressed now. We're going to get there. Well, here I am in 16 and 18, and we're right in the middle of it. And I'd rather not be here, but that's where we are. And now we're going through a correction phase. And we're going to correct. We're going to fix it. We're going to get on the right path. But, you know, I want us to bleed as little as we possibly can, Paul, in that. So.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for your questions. Gary, do you have any closing comments before we move on?
No, only the fact I appreciate you guys coming. You know, obviously what I've been doing has been, I don't know, I guess newsworthy or not, but don't particularly like to be in the situation I am. There's nothing more important to me than having a house that functions. It has to work. I don't care the makeup of the house. It has to function. So we can pass the three important things, and that is crime reform, PFDs, and the budget. That's the only thing the legislature, if we talked about no other bills this year and got out in 90 to 100 days, we're successful, and that's my goal. But we have to get to that point. So I don't get an opportunity to speak to everybody as we're in Juneau and we're going through this process. We do what we can through electronic newsletters, social media, which I hate with a passion. So this is the opportunity to come back and talk face-to-face, a much better face-to-face, so we can have the discussion and the questions. And so please, if there's something that didn't get answered, call the office, reach out to Jamie or Shay, and I'll answer any questions, concerns. Further things you want to know about, I'll answer, I'll dig, do the research, whatever it is. We're just trying to share the information right now. As Peggy said, it's kind of no deep dives have been done yet in the budget, and we're still processing all that. So it just got rolled out, what, 3 days ago? So thanks, you guys. Thanks, you guys, for coming. Tonight, if I didn't get all your questions answered tonight, from 5:30 to 7, Kenai River Suites, we're having a town hall meeting. Everybody, of course, is invited. Hope to continue asking questions. and taking questions is just as important, you know, that we know from you that we're on the right track and what your concerns are going forward. And now you're getting a feel for where the governor's budget is and the potential impacts to all of us in the peninsula statewide. It's a big issue. It's a big issue statewide. It's a big issue to us locally. So looking for feedback, any ideas everybody would have on that. So thanks again.